This is one of our series on water. Our special guest tonight is our Secretary of State, Douglas Mifflin. Secretary of State, it's all yours.
Put me in charge for a few minutes.
I put you in charge for as long as you want.
Well, good evening, folks. It was nice to be invited to come and chat with you folks a little bit with this Great Panthers organization, which is kind of interesting. I was asked to bring along a couple copies of this famous book, which was written eons ago, it seems like. So I thought of a few thoughts about water, given that's what the concepts are. Yeah, I'm sure you've all heard the human body is something like 90% water, which is kind of hard to believe, you know, when you poke yourself a few times. And of course, living where we do here in Wisconsin, we take having all the clean water we want to drink and to brush our teeth with at the turn of a faucet. We take it for granted. And our water is pretty good here. There's been some issues with lead and things from time, but the city of Madison actually got on the lead issue quite early compared to places like Flint, Michigan, and other things we read about. From a global point of view, the amount of fresh water is very limited. People don't think about that, because here in Wisconsin, it's a very wet place, lakes and streams everywhere. But most of the water on the planet is either frozen or salty. And so the fresh water is quite limited. And we depend upon solar energy, most people don't think about that, to purify the water for us. Because the sun, solar energy, evaporates the water from the oceans and then drops it on the land and there's rain or snow, which again is now fresh water. So that cycle of purification is what allows us to continue to have our streams and our rivers and also the water coming out of our taps and gives us the water to grow our food. If it wasn't for that cycle, we wouldn't have water for agricultural purposes. Historically through rain, and of course now with irrigation, which was a good idea theoretically, but it's now become a problem. In Wisconsin particularly, irrigation has caused a couple of problems. Our interaction with water is fairly limited, except for walking in the rain possibly. The only water concepts we have in Wisconsin either come from our surface water or our groundwater. And our surface water is, of course, what we know best. That's the lakes in Madison. It's the Har River. It's the Wisconsin River. It's all of northern Wisconsin, whether, I guess, Minnesota and Wisconsin argue about who has 10,000 lakes. But that's the surface water. And that's what we know very well. And that surface water provides us with, in many cases, drinking water, and Lake Michigan provides drinking water for a large area, and many of the rivers do. The groundwater is another story. The groundwater is something that probably until recently no one even thought about. I'm sure the native people that lived here never dealt with the groundwater, because any well people would dig in until recently did not go down very far. You've got to go quite a ways to get to the groundwater, but now we've learned how to do that. And there are places where some of the aquifers, an aquifer, as you all know, I'm sure, is like a giant underground lake. And some of those aquifers are very big. One of the biggest ones runs from Canada all the way down through South Dakota, North Dakota, and that one has been pumped a great amount of time and is in danger. That aquifer is pumped, because when you pump it, the water level goes down. And unless that water is returned to the aquifer through rain, which has to seep down in there, and it's called recharging. And those aquifers don't recharge very quickly. Some of them in particular don't recharge at all well. So here in Wisconsin, there are sort of maybe three factors that we should be concerned about in terms of our water. The first is overuse, where we're actually using more water than the water can deal with in terms of recharging or providing. And of course, that's the wells. And now we have what I'm sure you've heard the term high capacity wells. These are wells that can pump literally hundreds of gallons of water out. And there's two reasons for those that I know of. One is to put it in bottles and sell it. And you alluded to that a minute ago, whether Perrier or somebody thought it was a clever idea. But mostly it's for irrigation purposes. And some of it is for municipal use, for the drinking water for a city. But those high capacity wells that are used for irrigation have pumped a lot of groundwater out. And in many cases, it's pumped out more than it can recharge. Well, the next issue, which kind of relates to that, is contamination. The contamination primarily comes from either chemicals or animals.
Why don't you move over here, sir? And, there's a hearing issue there.
Okay. And one of those animals is us. The biggest animal we think about are the cows, of course. And we got lots of those. But we're also animals, and we produce waste as well. The one of the biggest problems is in parts of Wisconsin, which is called the Sand Country. I'm sure you've all heard about and probably read the Sand County Almanac, which is a very, very famous book. There's a whole bunch of them out that I was just looking at. And that was written about this part of Wisconsin, which is north of here and on up towards Stevens Point. And the reason it's relevant to what I'm chatting about is because it's sand, the water runs through it pretty quickly. And the agricultural people have been using certain chemicals. They use one called aldicarb, and they use one called atrazine, particularly on corn. Atrazine is a real problem. And that, because of the sand nature of that soil, that those chemicals have gotten into the groundwater more quickly than it would in other places. And then when you pump that water out, it's contaminated. And that contamination has been a problem in that area for people who have wells, who use those wells for their drinking water and their cooking. So some of those people have to use bottled water because of the contamination of chemicals. And I'm sure there's other cases of that all over the country. And the second issue is human waste. Historically, human waste was the big problem, because before, say, 1975 or so, a lot of municipalities did not have good treatment of the sewage. Sewage treatment comes in primary, secondary, and tertiary. Primary means you took out the big lumps, if you will. Secondary is you begin to treat that in a way to purify it and kill the bacteria. That can be done with chlorination, or can be done with ozone. The ozone is a more modern and probably a better way to treat it, because the chlorination can lead to another kind of contamination of resulting from the chlorine. And ozone it's been around for a long time now, but some cities put the water through ozone treatment to kill the bacteria before they send it out into the environment. And then tertiary treatment is where you think about getting rid of the fertilizer content. As you can imagine, this water coming from the sewage treatment plant is full of fertilizer. The manure is fertilizer, basically. And you kill the bacteria. It's no longer poisonous, if you will, but it still contains fertilizer. And what that fertilizer does in places where it shouldn't be is cause the algae blooms, cause our lakes here in Madison to turn green, and cause lots of problems. In Ohio, the last 2 years, they've had to shut down the drinking water supplies for several cities because of the contamination in Lake Erie. Big sections of Lake Erie were turning green, and they could not use that water. And that eutrophication, it's called, too much fertilizer, can only be eliminated through tertiary treatment, which is quite expensive. And so many cities do not do that. And then I guess the other problem is the animal waste from cows, which is not treated like human waste, is normally spread on the land. Many, many years ago, the farmers just had a few cows and they took the manure in a cart and tossed it around the field. And that didn't do a whole lot of harm. But when those few cows went to many cows and now have gone to humongous numbers of cows, 2,000-3,000 cows in one place, well, that they produce enough manure as the entire city of Milwaukee or more. And the farmers still have to deal with that. So there's two ways to do it. You can do it as a solid or a liquid. Some of the more modern ways is to store it in big concrete pits, and it's a liquidy form, and you can pump it, and then you can drive through the fields and spray it onto the field. Or you can still take it out and dump it as a solid on the fields. Well, that all sounds good, except if there's so much of it, and if the soil is fairly permeable, then that manure can go through and get into the groundwater and get into the water that people are using for drinking. And in parts of Wisconsin, primarily up in the Green Bay area, we've had that problem pretty seriously, where people's wells are contaminated with nitrates. Nitrate is a kind of fertilizer, so to speak. And so that nitrate pollution has gotten into the wells from cows, manure. And nitrate is not good for you, particularly not good for children and things. And I'm not an expert on that, but you can read more about the health effects of nitrate if you want somewhere. Well, the third thing I was going to talk about is poor land use practices. That's also is a threat to our water. The primary one is where you fill and eliminate wetlands. Wetlands are very important. We don't think of them as valuable or meaningful to us because we don't go swimming in them. We don't take water out of them to drink like we do our lakes and streams. But they are very important as far as protection of the water, purification of water, and protecting from flooding. And we've destroyed over half of the wetlands that were here before we began to develop this state a couple hundred years ago. And it's still going on. And one of the big threats right now that's raised its ugly head recently is the sand mining. It turns out Wisconsin has the best sand in the country for fracking. Anyone not know what fracking is? We're all up on fracking? Okay. When fracking first started, and I have some friends that were concerned about the pollution from it and did research on that in Colorado and Missouri, I didn't think about fracking bothering us until I learned about the sand. And it was kind of confusing at first, but just for fun, if this is shale a few hundred feet below the surface, when they frack it, they drill a hole down, and then they drill horizontal out from that hole. And then then they pump into there, under high pressure, water and chemicals. And that fractures the shale. So the gas or oil can get out. Why do they put sand in? Sand gets in here and sticks and holds that fracking open so it can't close up. And so that's why they want this very hard sand, which we have a lot of in northwest Wisconsin. There's something like 25 or so sand, they call them mines. They're not really a mine, they're more of a big open pit operation. And to our detriment, we don't have any laws controlling sand mining. Governor Walker and his friends refused to pass any laws. Iowa, Minnesota, and Illinois all quickly passed laws, not to ban sand mining, but to regulate it and to protect the groundwater and the surface water. Wisconsin did not do that. So we're the place they love to come to and build these big sand mine operations. I mention that primarily because if you're going to do that, it takes a lot of area. And many of the sand mines turn out to be in areas where they're wetlands. So they want to fill those wetlands in as part of their operation. And unfortunately, the DNR has been pretty good about saying, sure. Although they claim that if they destroy a wetland, they have to repair or mitigate another wetland somewhere else. And the history of that is very bad. The idea that you can create a wetland is pretty questionable. I once gave a speech about this where I was pretty exercised, and I made a comment saying that only God can make a wetland. You know, mm-hmm. Humans can try. We can go out with bulldozers and push it around and try to create a new wetland to make up for the one that was destroyed. But they haven't worked very well, to be honest. So those are the threats to water. I thought I'd talk a little bit about history. And I was supposed to mention this book that I wrote many years ago. And it's got a chapter on water, which is kind of fun to read now. It's not a whole lot out of date compared to the problems of today.
My thinking exactly, yeah.
But before I wrote this as part of kind of Earth Day and the environmental group that I started called Wisconsin Environmental Decade at the time. And at that time, we didn't have municipal treatment. And that's why we had the contamination from human waste. And we didn't have regulation of industry. When I was a professor teaching at Parkside down in Racine and Kenosha, another professor and I had he was a geologist and I was a chemist. And we had our students go out to a couple local factories, and they probably were trespassing a little, and they went in and they collected samples of the stuff coming out of those factories. And it was awful because there was no regulation. So the water was badly contaminated from human waste and from industry in 1950s and 60s, before the first Earth Day and before the first laws that were passed in Washington, the Clean Water Act and the Clean Air Act and many other, but the Clean Water Act particularly for tonight's conversation. And the government put a lot of money into municipal treatment because these cost money and the cities couldn't afford to build them. So the government gave grants to the cities to build water treatment plants. And that was a very good time. We all felt pretty excited in the 1970s because a lot of good stuff was happening.
Yeah.
And we passed laws controlling industry that they couldn't dump that stuff anymore. They had to treat it before they could dump their mercury or their lead or their chromium or their zinc, whatever they were doing in their industry, into the water. So things got better. And that was a time when we felt pretty good about it.
Gaylord Nelson and Earth Day.
Well, I was about to say that was the first Earth Day in 1970 that was inspired by Gaylord Nelson, our great senator. And I helped organize that in the area where I lived, in Racine and Kenosha area. And that's where I got the idea to start the environmental group I started, and then subsequently wrote this book, which is meant as a guide to how to raise hell about things and how to fix things. Every chapter has a section on what you can do and so forth. So after that first Earth Day, some of the major obvious problems got fixed, like the dead fish that were being killed by the sewage and the black smoke coming out of smokestacks. There's a power plant called Oak Creek Power Plant. And when I was living there in Kenosha and teaching at the university, black smoke came out of there all day long. And so we passed a law, and they had to put in what are called electrostatic precipitators, where you use electric charges to trap that black stuff. So the black smoke was gone and the fish came back. And this was the 1970s and we felt good. However, we got surprised in the 1980s with what I call the second stage of the environmental movement, where we discovered that those fish were contaminated with mercury and lead. So you couldn't eat the fish, even though they came back, but you couldn't eat them. And Wisconsin and many other states had advisories telling people not to eat fish, particularly if they were pregnant or if they were young. the black smoke was gone, but what was come out of those smokestacks? It was sulfur dioxide and nitrogen dioxide, things causing acid rain, and other problems that we never thought about in originally. And of course, no one thought about carbon dioxide, which was coming out of there. And that's what causes the major climate disruption problem we're facing now. So we felt good about it, and then we suddenly discovered, wait a minute, it was a heck of a lot more complicated than we thought. Getting rid of the black smoke and building sewage treatment plants was a good thing, but it wasn't enough. So then we started the fights to try to control the acid coming out of the power plants. And then finally, now there's talk about how to control the CO2. But there's really no reasonable way to control the CO2. You got to just stop burning the fossil fuel. They have ideas of how to capture it and sequester it. So it's called capture and sequester. And the coal companies love that idea because then they can keep on burning coal if they can prove that you can capture and sequester the carbon dioxide. But nowhere has it been proven to work yet. They've tried it several places. It's very expensive. There are places where they capture it and then they inject it in oil wells, for example, to push out more oil. And they've been doing that for some time. But that isn't really a solution. Some people want to put the CO2 in the ocean, at the bottom of the ocean, because they figure that's a lot of pressure from the water would keep the CO2 in a liquid form, and it's cold down there. So you could pump the CO2 down under the ocean bed and store it there forever. Again, nobody's even tried such a crazy idea yet. So now we're faced with a more complicated situation, and it relates to a lot of issues. One of my favorite issues, which I like to talk about, is population. And that's the one that's very controversial. No one wants to talk about it. But between the first Earth Day, when there were 3.8 billion people, now we have 8 and going on 9 billion people. So the population of the Earth has doubled, and the demands of the people has required a lot more activity. And that activity has caused the environmental problems to continue to get worse in some areas, even though we now have some solutions, but they're not sufficient. And then the climate issue is the big one. And I've got talks in the last 30 minutes where I talk about the climate issue. I'm not going to do that. Most of you know what it's all about, and it's very complicated. And China now is the biggest emitter of so-called global warming gases. The primary one is, of course, carbon dioxide, but also methane is another global warming gas. And a lot of that comes from cows, by the way. The cows produce that when they burp. But it also comes from other sources, like natural gas wells. When they drill natural gas and put it in pipelines, a lot of that leaks. And of course, methane is just natural gas, really. So if that methane is leaking out, it causes a lot of environmental problems that are in the short term worse than CO2, but in the long term, CO2 is worse because it lasts longer, more very complicated stuff. So what are we going to do about the climate issue? I don't know. The United States is the only country that has now refused to go along with the so-called Paris Agreement. And there are 200 countries in Bonn, Germany right now discussing what's the next step to do something about climate issues that was agreed to in Paris. All the countries agreed to do something, but not sure what. And the experts that I read say the things they propose to do just aren't going to be enough. So from my perspective and what I read, it's too late to avoid major climate impacts. It's already happening with the hurricanes that produce more water, with the droughts, etc., that are going on around the world. So we're going to have a major problem. The question is, can we act quick enough to avoid a catastrophe? A catastrophe would be if the warming allows Greenland ice shelf to melt and go into the ocean, which causes the ocean to go up between 6 and 9 feet, that would be a catastrophe. We can stop that and just have a big problem. The big problem's gonna be tough enough to deal with. But to stop that, we need to stop burning fossil fuel. And the CO2 emissions this year are going to be bigger than last year. Unfortunately, they've gone up, primarily because of coal burning and probably, of all worst, probably in China. Even though China's doing a lot about solar energy and wind energy, they're the leader right now in doing that. But it's such a big country and so many people, they're still burning and a lot of coal. So it's gotta be a problem. And we'll see what happens. Well, I guess with that, I'll be quiet with one last thought. What's currently in Wisconsin? Well, the bad news is that our DNR is sort of dropped the ball. The DNR one time did a pretty good job with things. Never perfect, because they were a political body indirectly. But under the new administration, they fired many of the scientists. They've appointed people in charge who know nothing about the environment, really. And they have weakened regulations for our state. So the DNR has become a problem. And the other problem, of course, is what to do about these issues I mentioned, the contamination. And there are two groups that are doing quite a lot of work on that. One is Clean Wisconsin. And Clean Wisconsin is the new name for Wisconsin Environmental Decade. They changed their name. So I'm very proud of Clean Wisconsin because I started them in my living room with a mimeograph machine in 1970 down in Kenosha, Wisconsin. But they're doing good work. And they've got several lawyers and scientists working with them. The other good group is called Midwest Advocates. Midwest Advocates is based in Chicago, but they work in Wisconsin as well as Illinois, and they're a very good group. So I urge you, if you want to know more information about this, you can find it on the websites of Clean Wisconsin or Midwest Advocates. And with that, I'll say, unfortunately, my driver has to get me out of here, so I'm going to let you look at these films and enjoy your popcorn and stuff. No, you forgot the popcorn. Okay.
Well, we can go after it. Anybody have questions for Doug?
I was asked to bring along a couple of copies of this. You can have a drawing, or you can fight over them some way.
Well, I have my own. It's floating around here somewhere. Actually, I got one that you autographed for me a while back.
That's right.
But I lent it out. Somebody else got it. So anyway.
Thank you all for coming tonight. And
thank you.
If you had a question, I would try to answer it. One thing I learned years ago, I try never to say, if you have any questions, I'll answer your questions now, because maybe I can't answer them. And you know who I learned that from? Gaylord Nelson. When I first heard him speak, and I heard him speak many times in his life, at the end he would always say, and now I will try to answer questions. And I really like that, so I've always tried to do what Gaylord always used to do.
Well, I have one that I'm sure you can't answer, but it grieved very heavy on me. Foxconn. Foxconn's going to want lots of water. Where are they going to get it from? What are they going to do with it? What's it going to be like when they are done with it? And where are they going to put it? I mean, yeah. Huge. And I don't think people are looking seriously enough at this as part of the great deal.
Well, the legislature exempted them from environmental regulation as part of the deal to get them come and provide 13,000 jobs. I can't imagine this. I used to live in Racine, and I lived in Kenosha. And I just can't imagine the impact on those communities of 13,000 workers, which means 35,000 people, and houses and traffic and cars. To deal with the water, well, they'll want to pump it out, and they'll want to take it from Lake Michigan. And I don't know what the contamination factor is for the production of these screens that they're going to make. But I'm sure it takes quite a bit of water. And the water they use probably comes out of the place pretty dirty.
Yep.
So hopefully they'll have to treat it before they dump it into Oak Creek or someplace.
Into the wetlands, but they say we can make new ones.
Pardon?
They're gonna dump into the wetlands, but they say we can make new wetlands, till the wildlife's that, you know.
No, that's a very strange deal. I'm very suspicious of it. I'm suspicious of the company that they don't have a good record. And I'm suspicious of that impact and how much better off Wisconsin will be if we have 8,000 or 10,000 more jobs in that area. I'm not opposed to people having jobs, but sometimes they don't work out as well as you might think. Okay, well, I'm going to wish you a good evening and thank you very much.
Thank you so much for coming.